Hello and welcome to Strat News Global Podcast. I'm Nitin Gokhale. Last week, I spoke to Anshuman Tripathi, who is a member of the National Security Advisory Board and a technology czar, who gave me a glimpse into what the national security priorities are and how technology can play into national security and enhance national security if used correctly, either old technology or new technology. Do listen in. National security is no longer been counting like it used to be, how many ships, submarines or aircraft and how many troops that you have. It's gone much beyond that. What now people used to call non-traditional security or technology-aided security if you want. Where are we as far as national security being supported by technology, both traditional technology and upcoming technology? Your thoughts.
Thanks for having me on your show. It's great to be here. And that's a great starting question because I think from a technology perspective and national security looks at capabilities. And capability could be a technology which is new or could be technology which is old. Traditionally, it's a combination. So many times we have to mix and match, and India is in a very good position where we have good talent that is upcoming, and we are not only have talent for our country, but also exporting abroad. So we're in a very good position in that respect.
That's right. Now, if that is the case, what are you looking at in terms of contributing to national security as someone who's at a crucial advisory body? I will not say that you are in an executive position, but in a crucial advisory body which can actually set directions for a roadmap for national security aided by technology.
So we are doing a lot of things. The essential part is we want to not leave anything out, coming up with frameworks where every aspect is taken care of. We're looking at R&D. We're looking at R&D spin. Mm-hmm. Is the R&D just mirrored in government, or we are also spreading our wings across the private sector as well? Because as you know, today, the military and civil fusion is going on. There's a lot of military-civil fusion. The entrepreneurial community is brimming with ideas. And now the wave is there to make the country strong, make the country a developed nation. So there are a lot of technologies which are in the private sector which are being brought in. We are working hard to get these two together and have a cohesive approach towards taking the national security forward.
So this meshing of civil military talent use cases, if I can put it that way, is something that is not really new in the world. I mean, the US has done it, the Chinese have done it, many other countries have done it. In our case, maybe we were slow to start with, but is this a trend where now even technology which is, innovated or invented or developed by civil private players will come into military, or the military will ask for it and then the civil fellows will start working on it?
Good question. A bit of both. Mm-hmm. If you look somewhere around the early 2010s, the Americans realized that technology envelope in the civilian sector had gone past the military sector. So the defense primes did not have that good a technology as the civilian sector. And a fundamental player in there was semiconductors.
There you are.
Semiconductors is what the chips got faster, the chips could handle more data, we could store more data, and we could access that data, you know, in a jiffy. And so that is what moved forward. And that has continued to grow, and every country has realized that. Mm. And that's why those technologies are coming in. Now, as those technologies come in, the very fundamental one that I like to tell you about is open source. Mm. There are a lot of open source technologies which have been developed by, you know, technical contributions from the world over.
Sure.
Linux was the very first one, you know, which is competing with Windows.
Right.
And after that operating system, now we have RISC-V processors. Mm. We got RDU pilot on the drones. Mm-hmm. So all the drones that we see in the enthusiasts, in the hobby world, a lot of that is running on open source.
Yes.
Then on CCTV, you know, object identification, YOLO. So there are a lot of these technologies which are open source and are available for use, which are coming into picture. Now, these are the solutions from the civilian side.
Mm-hmm.
Now, at the same time, the military establishment has the opportunity to say and demand what are their needs. When they give their needs, the entrepreneurial community can give back. And that is a faster process, mm-hmm. which can be made a little faster. The standard problem of procurement
is, sure.
ours is there.
Yes.
But we have solutions. And many of these solutions are there in the private sector.
Right. Now, let me take you back to our first question and the answer that you gave, that it's a bit of both traditional technology and the upcoming or the future technology which should be looked at. And I think in this context, I was watching or listening to your small intervention at a seminar in Bangalore mm-hmm. about 100 years ago, where were we and where are we now? And, you know, really, have we really made that jump or have we forgotten some of those things? So, just explain that how do you mix or do the right balance between traditional technology or technology that is already proven or existing and the upcoming ones like AI and quantum and semiconductors to be used? How do you balance those needs?
Interesting question. If you look, there are some technologies which are seen as foundational technologies on the basis of which other technologies are built, and they could be sector agnostic. The one that you were talking about, I gave a very simple example that, you know, when we're talking about strategy, we use history as an example. You know, history repeats, history rhymes. If you go back 100 years, at that time, Henry Ford was making the T Model Ford. At that time, his wife, Clara Ford, did not like to drive a T Model Ford. She preferred an electric vehicle made by Detroit Electric. Now, ladies back then preferred an electric car because electric cars did not need a crankshaft to start, didn't create any pollution. There was no exhaust, electric batteries.
Right.
So they all preferred it, and it was expected. And from then, 1920s to now, 100 years, suddenly we have a spurt of new technology. We have electric vehicles. We've got Tesla. India's making so many.
So many of them, yes.
What happened? What happened was gasoline became cheap. And so geopolitical economics came into the game.
Yes.
So technology per se is just technology. Who uses it? A simple military example is a gun is a gun. Yeah. In the hands of a terrorist, it can create damage. In the hands of a police officer, it's there for protection.
Correct.
So technology, how you use it, and how you don't is dependent on other factors, which are geopolitical and economics in nature. In the case of electric vehicles, one other key part which came in is silicon carbide chips. So Tesla was able to make a big push because of semiconductors.
Once again, it proves
back to semiconductors.
A foundation technology.
Right.
And if you look at it from back then to now, what will change? If you go through a list, you know, clothing, we wear similar kinds of clothes.
Right.
What has changed? Polyester yarn.
Yes.
That is simulated on computers, which are on semiconductors. So everything we can do has semiconductors at some level, helping them grow forward.
Absolutely. So in context, and there has to be a context for every technology, where how it is used in this, what exactly what you're trying to convey. But let me come to the utilization of technology for national security. So one is, of course, the defense forces will use semiconductors. They will use AI or whatever they want, and ammunition can get better, more lethal, all that can happen. In terms of intelligence, intelligence agencies, you know, one of the fundamental things was about human intelligence, and of course, techint has always improved over the years, over decades. But now the attack on the Gaza Strip by the Hamas and catching Israel by complete surprise has rekindled the debate on whether you can depend so much on technology alone and, you know, gain what you want in terms of intelligence that you want. Where do you put this change that might come as far as combination of human and techint is concerned?
Fantastic question. And I said this before also in that speech that you were talking about.
Right.
Technology per se is supposed to augment the human capability.
Right.
But unfortunately, technology ends up playing on the human failing that we become lazier. So what happens is, for example, we now type. So we have forgotten how to write. And this happens because of a concept called anti-fragility.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Nassim
Taleb. Yes, Nassim Taleb. That's yeah.
one. Correct. This is fragile is something you put under pressure, it breaks.
Yes.
Anti-fragile is something which when you put under pressure,
expands or
spreads. Mm-hmm. Like the Indian concept of rakt beej.
Right. Absolutely.
The more he bleeds, the bigger he
yes.
becomes.
Yes.
So, and as they say in the military, the more you sweat in peace, the less you bleed in war.
Absolutely.
So, with all this technology, we're supposed to be augmenting, you know, force multiplier. But unfortunately, the humans coming into the system today are not the same as what their predecessors were on their capabilities. So that has played a role, which is rather unfortunate. And as a lot of many people have said, AI could make that worse. So we have to be very careful going forward that the human race, as a race, we continue to keep our skill sets alive.
Right. The basic skill sets that we have, yes.
Yes. And if we don't, we'll end up in, you know, as Yuval Harari also says, you know, two different players, one who have and one who don't.
Exactly.
On the skill
set. The haves and the have nots, yeah.
On the skill set.
Absolutely.
And that is the clear challenges today. Even on the tech and on the human side, we have a clear trade-off, which many people did not understand earlier on, that this shift is happening. If you look at also the kind of words we use, you know, so there's this, you know, research which has been done on the vocabulary of the American president in the State of the Union address. And there's a clear fall in the number of words used, the different words in the vocabulary.
Yes.
This is a...
I was reading that. They repeat the same words too often now.
And now, and you know, so the bigger words, you know, the that kind of stuff is where we have a problem. We have to come up with new policies to restrict that from happening.
Sure. So you can't get carried away with AI, which is not the answer to everything. I mean, human intelligence is unbeatable, if you really
exactly.
see. So in that sense. So let me come back to more practical issues about where you are sitting and what you're trying to do. What are the sector? I mean, semiconductors you spoke about. So first, tell us more about how semiconductor sector is going to develop in India. What is your forecast? And if I have to ask you, what are the other sectors India should work on or look at in the coming decade? If it is called a tech decade or India's decade, then what should India be looking at? Just not as a national security issue, but also for India to develop into maybe a 5 trillion economy and beyond. What are your thoughts on that?
See, if you look at India as a whole, India is a big, large country. When we sometimes look at India, we forget India is not one country. India is more like Europe. Different countries all working together.
Yeah.
And because of that size, it's not just one technology that we can focus on.
Yeah.
We can focus on a lot of technologies at the same time.
Right.
We have the talent pool for it. Not only for India, but we're exporting talent.
Pool. Absolutely.
Going to the US, going to Europe, going to Australia. A large talent pool. So this talent pool, as I said before, semiconductors. If you look at any fab in the world, which manufactures semiconductors, any design house, there's a very high chance there's an Indian engineer who's doing it. So we have those traits. We have the education system, the infrastructure. Well, it needs improvement. What doesn't need it?
Yeah, everything needs improvement, exactly.
Everything needs tweaking.
Sure.
But we have that size, that juggernaut size of talent pool.
Right.
And semiconductors. Another area is AI, because AI is going to be another foundational technology. Quantum. Now, quantum is one area which is going to, in my perspective, play a larger role in strategy, in strategic sector and in national security. Because quantum computers, per se, can only solve a very small, specific set of problems. And those problems are more amicable towards the strategic side than on the civilian side. They have more applications, let me say.
Right.
Or we can say the generals are like to pay more money for those solutions than the civilian side.
They're much more effective solutions, yes.
That is one. Second part that is of interest is not just quantum computing, quantum technology in sensors. will be able to provide you more data, which present solutions might not be able to give you. So, and that would also be on the strategic side.
Right.
So, quantum is another area which will be there that we should be focusing on.
Right.
And in general, as I said, because we are a talent hub, we'll be exporting this talent to the rest of the world.
Mm.
So, everything that we do impacts the world. Another part that I would say is, we look at all the technologies. We have a lot of talent pool, but we don't have that much of IP.
Mm. Original IP is not there. I mean,
original IP is missing.
Missing.
That is one area where India needs to grow.
Right.
Even in semiconductors. Mm. Semiconductors on the strategic side is more focused on compound semiconductor, gallium nitride, gallium arsenide. And India is very well focused and very well placed in those areas because we have been working on that side since we had the embargoes post Pokhran 2.
Right.
So we've got GATTEC, we've got other DRDO facilities and other academic institutions which are focused on compound semiconductors. Mm. But as I've said before, compound has a very niche market,
right.
Very small in comparison to silicon.
Mm-hmm.
Silicon, we have the best designers. We are looking at getting fabs in the country.
Mm-hmm.
We need to have our own companies, have our own internal IP. So Indian cell phones should have an Indian chip.
Right.
That is one area that we're looking at.
That will be the next step in assembling phones, iPhones.
Yeah. It's a process going
forward. Right.
And I think the Indian government and everybody is realizing those things. The Make in India program also has now matured.
Right.
We have reached a stage where both sides now understand each other better and we'll, you know, fine-tune our frameworks to take it to the next level. We are reaching that cusp where new frameworks will come in, which will empower the true entrepreneur a lot more. And those who were like also ran or, you know, looked at that opportunity just for the opportunity perspective might, you know, want to rethink their values.
Absolutely. No, you're absolutely right. This last decade, one has witnessed from close quarters the mindset change that has come into the decision makers in the national security setup about looking for India-made original IP-based solutions.
Exactly.
For the armed forces, for the intelligence agencies and everywhere. I think this is a great base to start with and then take it forward. But thank you very much for your insights. I'm sure you'll have a lot of things to contribute. But thanks for coming and giving us this perspective on where technology and national security actually converge.